It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and this is Lindsay Buckingham. Nothing puts me in the mood for travel like Holiday Road. We may be approaching the end of summer, but road trip season is still going strong. In fact, some people think of fall as peak road trip season. You got cooler weather, smaller crowds. And that second point is important because for some of us, a big part of the road trip experiences is taking on some of the great and weird sights along the way. Motels and restaurants that date back to the heyday of Route 66 and supersized landmarks like the world's largest catsup bottle in Collinsville, Illinois. Rolando Pujol has chronicled all of this and more. He's a journalist, a top news executive at the big ABC station in New York City. He's also the creator and author of a newsletter and Instagram account called The Retrologist. And this year he made some of that work into a book called The Great American Retro Road Trip, a celebration of roadside Americana. He joins us now. Rolando Pujol, welcome to the 21st Show.
I'm very, very happy to be here. It's funny, when I saw the name of the show, it took me a second to figure it out, but the 21st state. Yes, I get it. I love the name.
I appreciate that. Sometimes we have to explain that, no, the interview is not on the 21st of the month. It's the 21st show. Listeners, if you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. Our phone lines are open for the rest of the hour. What are some of your favorite road trip attractions, especially in Illinois? You know, what's the last great road trip you took? And what road trips are still on your bucket list? 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. All right, let's start with this idea that, I mean, you are the retrologist, which, gosh, sounds like a doctor I do not want to have to see. But what does it mean to you for something to be retro?
Yeah, for me, something that's retro is something that harkens back to an earlier time, that is a survivor of a period in American history. Let's start the clock around the 1920s and take it right through the 1980s, when a great deal of effort was put into the appearance of our retail infrastructure. Long before the internet, long before notifications from your phone did so much of our marketing, long before social media, the best way to reach people, whether aside from, of course, commercials on television, was when they were out and about out there in the big world. It was the architecture. It was the signage. That's what compelled us. And so as a result, an arms race, if you will, a space race of creativity and one-upmanship broke out coast to coast. And the legacy of that, we can celebrate in what we under the loose term roadside Americana.
So we're talking about what, giant statues of people holding hot dogs, that kind of thing?
Yeah, giant statues. The Paul Bunyan hot dog man down in Atlanta, Illinois, Casey, Illinois. The whole town is devoted to big and giant things. A tourist hook that has worked most effectively. That's correct. It's those kinds of things. But let me also put other things under the rubric of roadside Americana. It can be roadside as in Main Street, the old barbershops and the old diners and things, you know, the sorts of businesses that gave texture to our downtowns and our communities, that gave character, that made one town different than another town. There's so much monotony and sameness in our architecture, in our retail landscape today. These places come from a time when that was far from it. Most places, even fast food places, had a distinctive flair and feel. And so I'm trying to shine a light on the places that survive and hopefully inspire people to see them so that they can continue and thrive and maybe even inspire new entrepreneurs to create places like this going into the future.
Yeah, you've seen one McDonald's. You've seen pretty much most of them at this point, although there are exceptions. I'm going to share some text messages we got from listeners throughout our conversation today. On point, Jesse in Mattoon says, Casey, Illinois has some interesting oddities. World's largest mousetrap, mailbox, rocking chair, piggy bank, to name a few. Neighboring Greenup, Illinois has let me say, has an order in advance Indian cuisine restaurant in the gas station that's absolutely delicious. It's a fun place for all ages. Okay, an order in advance Indian cuisine restaurant in a gas station.
There you go.
Yeah. So what got you interested in chronicling all this?
Well, you know, like a lot of things that are passion projects, things that people really love, began in childhood. Road trips that my family would take. My father and mom loved getting on the road. God bless them. They're still around and they still do. And I often take them. But there's one trip in particular that I always come back to, which was a road trip we took in the summer of 77 from the New York area. I grew up in Westchester County, just north of the city, down in Miami. And seeing all kinds of fun and roadside oddities along I-95 that made a real impression. For me, the biggest stop on that trip, which in my memory even outweighs whatever I saw in Miami, and there was a lot of great stuff, was South of the Border, which is a kind of a kitschy, kind of tacky roadside attraction in Dillon, South Carolina, the pun being that it's south of the border of North Carolina, and that led into a sort of this ersatz Mexican theme. Place is very much over the top, and it's hard to believe, really, when you're even exploring it, that such a thing was created and it's existed so long. And what gets your attention, of course, is the billboard campaign up and down 95 and other roads with great, clever puns that are compelling you forward, so that by the time you finally get to the attraction noted on the right side of the road by a gigantic sombrero observation deck, you just have to pull over and see what the big fuss is about. And sometimes it's a bit of a letdown almost. You get there, you're like, okay, this is it. But the excitement comes from the experience, from the anticipation, and then from the memory of that moment with your family and friends, and then wanting to get back to that. I mean, I stop at Pedro every time I'm on a road trip in that area, and it brings me back to that very first primal memory in 1977.
Yeah, I guess this is like the wall drug in one of the Dakotas.
That's correct. It uses very much the same marketing approach. And even before wall drug, the old Burma Shave ads with a sequential sort of messaging along the side of the road that compelled people to buy this brushless shaving cream.
Yeah. And there's a place we were just driving through Nebraska this summer on Interstate 80 that goes over the highway. Yeah. Is the attraction there. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head, though.
That's right. Yes, but I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. All right. Let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We're talking with journalist Rolando Pujol, creator of a newsletter and Instagram page called The Retrologist. He's also written a book about some of the nostalgic things and places to be found on the roads across America, including here in Illinois. The book is called The Great American Retro Road Trip, A Celebration of Roadside Americana. Again, we asked members of our texting group about their favorite road trip attractions in Illinois. You can join that by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Christina in Hoopston said, "My sister and I took our cousins visiting from Sweden to the Route 66 Museum in Pontiac, Illinois. None of us had been there before. Well worth the trip. My other favorite place to road trip in Illinois is to Pine Hills LaRue Swamp for the Cottonmouth and Copperhead snake migration. They close off the road between the swamp and forest to let the snakes get where they need to go. Perfect." Christina, thank you for that, but no thank you. We talked about the snake migration on the show in the past. You can find that by Googling the 21st NPR Snake Road, and it's on our website, 21stshow.org. Let me say, we also heard from Kevin and Farina, who told us, "My wife likes to drive the old U.S. highways, byways, and back roads. We enjoy eating at the local mom-and-pop restaurants and avoid chains like the plague. There are so many favorites in Illinois and elsewhere, but Indiana's covered bridge routes are fantastic with or without the festival." Talk about that, choosing where people choose to go, because you see those blue signs on the side of the highway. They're often directing you to the big fast food retailers. And I know you have an appreciation for those as well. But talk about that tension between the mom and pop and the chains.
It's a very good one. Roadside Americana to me is a more of an all-encompassing term that can include fast food places, not necessarily just covered by quirky mom and pop businesses, but absolutely, I think there is almost a moral imperative to support the mom and pops, right? Because they're the ones who I think have the greatest struggle to survive. But at the same time, fast food places can I stress the word can, don't necessarily have a lot of charm as well, especially ones that have not been updated or that reflect the evolution of fast food design. You will still find lots of, not many these days, but some older McDonald's that have some nostalgic appeal from the 70s. And certainly in Illinois, there are many wonderful vintage Dairy Queens that are special. Dairy Queen is a fine example. I think of a chain that, even though it is that, it also feels like a mom and pop, especially the legacy Dairy Queens that have the old neon signs and the old concrete white building. And there's a tremendous charm to a Dairy Queen, and they're so small and, compact and involved into the life of a community. And it's important to note too about fast food places, which I certainly change, is that many of them are operated by local people, I mean, who are trying to make a go of it and run a business. And they certainly have the advantage and the marketing muscle of a big company behind them. But it's your neighbors that are running this place and are working in this place. So that's something to consider too when thinking about chains. But yes, I think that tension is always there. But when I enter a town, I like to sort of look at things holistically. What's the big scheme here? What's happening downtown? What are the historic attractions? What chains are here? Is there anything interesting here that might have an archaeological bent to it? Like, for example, if I drive into a town, I was visiting Wisconsin Dells a couple of years ago, and as I was entering town, I saw there was an old Ponderosa steakhouse. I had not seen one of those in many years. And so I definitely had to pull over and at least look inside and see if the buffet was still there. But you raise an interesting point. I think to me, if you're going to do this kind of travel or organize your trips around it, it's good to have a sort of a wide perspective and an openness to all kinds of things that you might encounter.
So we have been doing a pretty good job of bringing in some of the Illinois elements that are in your book, which is organized by region across the country. Obviously, 21st show, 21st state. We're big fans of Abraham Lincoln here. In fact, John and Elgin texted us to say Route 66 gets all the glory, but I just love to stumble upon random Lincoln stuff. And even the tiniest, most forgotten corners of central Illinois, the Postville Courthouse in Lincoln, the Long Nine Museum in Athens, David Davis Mansion in Bloomington, and most of all the places where Lincoln wept, or I should say, the place where Lincoln wept in a bean field outside Petersburg. So many little memories and artifacts passed down through generations that all want to claim kinship with this great man. Thank you
That's
for that
great.
message, John. Rolando, what did you see that was Lincoln as you were putting all this together?
Oh my goodness, so much Lincoln. I mean, even starting up in the Chicagoland, up in Niles, where you have the town where you have the Leaning Tower of Niles, there is a Abraham Lincoln statue downtown, which is a great photo op. He's sitting on a bench, and again, it's hard to escape his presence, and understandably so, throughout the state. One of the quirkiest Abe Lincoln monuments, if you will, and it's one that I ended up not including in the book. There's only so much space, but if there's a second edition, I will. It's also in the town of Lincoln, Illinois, where of course you've got the covered wagon. Lincoln with Abe reading the law book, and but also in town is a very curious monument. It's a watermelon statue, which is a tribute to Abe Lincoln. And the reason it's a watermelon is that Lincoln, the town, was consecrated apparently with watermelon juice rather than alcohol, because Lincoln was said to be a teetotaler in 1853 when the town was began to be carved out. And it was named for Lincoln while the great man was still alive, and even before he had become president or the great emancipator, which goes to show the impact he had well before he became a household name coast to coast. So that's one that I really like seeing. But one that I'm another one that I'm somewhat fond of is the one at the grounds of the Illinois State Fair in Springfield, the tall and lanky Abe Lincoln, the rail splitter from the late 60s. It's sort of a window into a younger, clean-shaven Abraham Lincoln, all the promise that the great man had visible in that photo, in that statue.
Yeah, absolutely. Just right at the main entrance of the fairgrounds there.
That's correct. Yeah, he's right
Yeah.
there.
I was talking to somebody recently about how just sort of reflecting on how we used to learn the weather from bank signage. I don't know, this is like something for people of a certain age, or at least the temperature. And I thought, well, that doesn't really happen anymore. And then, sure enough, I did see one bank that's still doing that, at least in the town where I live. But talk to me about the weather bell in Chicago. What is that? How does that
Oh my
work?
goodness. I was just drawn to the weather bell when I discovered it walking around downtown. I took the picture about a decade ago, and I was happy to see that it's still there. And the weather bell was created by the, it emerged from the Bell Savings and Loan Association, the employee bank there in this building downtown. And the bell communicates the weather on the basis of the color. And if you may give me a moment, I can read the actual sort of plan. When weather bell is emerald green, no change in temperature is foreseen. When weather bell is glowing red, warmer weather is ahead. When weather bell is flaming gold, a temperature drop is foretold. When weather bell is flashing into agitation, prepare yourself for precipitation. I mean, you gotta love that. And there was once a little collection of weather bells around Chicago, but the one downtown is the last one, and thankfully still there. We also have the Money Bank Tower here in New York City, where I'm from, that also at one point communicated the weather based on the direction of the lights on the antenna on the roof, on the spire on the roof. So this was a thing, and it's a reminder of the world that we left not that long ago, before we were all connected, and you know, everything that in all the world's information, including the weather forecast, was available at our fingertips at any time. There were other ways that people got this information out and used it as an opportunity to also market and foster goodwill. And the Chicago Weather Bell is a perfect example of this.
Love it. All right. We're going to take a break. When we return, we'll have more with Rolando Pujol, known online as the Retrologist and the author of the new book, The Great American Retro Road Trip. What are your favorite Illinois spots? 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. This is the 21st show. Stay with us.
Can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again.
Really leaning in on the road trip playlists today. All right, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about road tripping with an author whose focus is on retro roadside Americana. His name is Rolando Pujol. He's known online as the Retrologist. His book is The Great American Retro Road Trip. Some more thoughts on memorable roadside attractions from members of our texting group. Virginia in Springfield said, I like Cozy Dog on 6th Street. That attraction is right here in Springfield, Illinois. I think I heard that Paul McCartney, a former Beatle, visited Cozy Dog while following Route 66. Tony and Champagne told us, we don't road trip much now that we're older, but I can recommend Gus's Diner in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Wonderful pancakes and decor. That's near Madison. My wife is a fan of the Mustard Museum in Middleton, Wisconsin. Tony and Virginia, thank you both. If you have a particular place that you try and visit on road trips, or if you've had a memorable experience, let us know. 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. All right, Rolando, how did you go about putting this book together? Is this all one massive road trip, several? Take us through the process.
Oh, goodness, I wish. I mean, I always say my dream career would be to inherit a Charles Kuralt's job on CBS on the road, right? Then I'd be in heaven, you know, traveling the country in an RV. But this was done, the research for this book was done over the course of really decades. I think the oldest photograph in the book dates to 2008 or 9 or so. When I began the research for this, I didn't realize that what I was researching was a book. It was more of a personal interest that then began to express itself through social media and Instagram and later on Substack and other platforms. But the research began just simply simply to satisfy an intellectual curiosity in me, and then a desire to see as much of this stuff before it was gone, a race against time. I began to organize these locations using simple Google Maps on a state-by-state basis. And in fact, I have my Illinois map punched up here, and I have 336 stops in Illinois, and I've seen a good number of them, but not all of them. So I'm just dying to get back to see more. So it was based on slow, gradual research over the years, and the basis of really anytime I read anything interesting or got a tip about a place, I put it on one of these maps and in different spreadsheets. I have online research as well ahead of trips, and the greatest joy, of course, is in discovery and serendipity and just finding things on a trip, because you might be going to one town for one reason, and then on the way there you stumble upon four other interesting things that you didn't know about. So for me, so much of what underlies all of this is the thrill derived from the joy of discovery.
So one person's retro nostalgic, dream is somebody else's. I got to get this thing out of the way so I can open my new whatever business.
Right.
I'm sure you've had to update entries over the years, right? As things are, maybe you find were trashed. How do you
Oh.
think? Talk about that. That idea that one person's art is another person's treasure or
So
trash, I should
true.
say. Treasure and
No,
trash. I got
sure.
that
No,
expression.
I totally get it. As I was editing the book and writing the book and finalizing it, even in last December when we were facing our deadline, I was routinely, it seemed, reaching out to the publisher to say, this place just closed, or this place is about to close. We saw this happen with the mass closure of a great number of the Frisch's Big Boy locations throughout the Midwest, and particularly in Ohio. I was writing about, I included Twin Donuts in near Boston, which has an iconic, beautiful neon sign. And a couple of months after the book was hit the presses, it closed. I just learned the other day that a new business has moved in there, and they opted, thankfully, to keep the sign. So yes, sometimes it is a tragedy. The wonderful place that you love so much that you photographed is destroyed. The sign might be saved and end up in private hands, but every so often you see nice examples, heartening examples of what's called adaptive reuse, when new hands come in and they have a new vision for the land or for the property, but they decide to honor the past by preserving aspects of it. And a very good example of this is one of my favorite stops. It's in Arizona, Williams, Arizona, near the south rim of the Grand Canyon. It is where, since 1972, you have been able to find Bedrock City, which is a roadside attraction devoted to the Flintstones, Fred and Wilma and Barney and Dino and the whole gang. And they're depicted there in actual structures and statues based on the characters. It is as though you are in fictional Bedrock. And a new business took over, however, in 2019, and Bedrock City was poised to close, but they very astutely opened up their business called Raptor Ranch, focused on birds of prey, but kept a lot of the Flintstone statuary and the big sign of Fred still right there along the road. So that's, I think, a good example of ways where a new owner can come into a legacy and historic business and carry on what they're hoping to do with it. I mean, they have a right. We live in a capitalist system to do what they wish, but to also honor the past and the history. And it's frankly good business, because I would have never gone to Raptor Ranch to see the Raptors. No offense to the Raptors, but I definitely wanted to see Fred and Wilma, and I got to do that.
I want to shout out a place in Springfield, Illinois. Ace Sign Company is like
Yeah.
they do a lot of the signage around town, modern business signs, but they have rescued a lot of the old vintage Route 66 era signs here. It's very limited hours, Monday through Friday, 10 to 2, but they made one of their sort of warehouse and a workshop into a museum where people can go see, actually lit up. They've restored a lot of these things.
I've been dying to go there. When I was in Springfield last June, I was not able. It was closed at the time. I ran into
Right.
the exact problem you're talking about. But there's the Route 66 Motorheads Bar and Grill, which has a great deal of Americana and neon, including the old Sunrise Donuts sign, which is very cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, we live in this era where a lot of the travel conversation is no longer in books like yours, which I gotta say, it's really beautifully done. Like, it's full color,
Thank you.
printing's very nice, organized by region. But, a lot of the conversation is now in the form of short form video, right? TikToks. How
That's
does
right.
that change discovery and how we, figure out where to go and what to see on our trips.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I never thought I would write a book in part for that reason, because I had managed to reach a very large and enthusiastic audience all on my own without working with a major publisher. But as I thought more about it, the idea of writing a book became more interesting to me, not for any sense of a personal legacy or investment, but rather out of a sense of concern for these places and their legacy. Because right now, of course, we live in this world. We live in reels and TikToks, and we're all of this content has great deal of social currency, because it is very appealing and interesting, and people are hungering for these kinds of real world experiences right now, these escapes from our reality right now. But I can't say for certain whether Instagram or Facebook or TikTok will be around in a year or two or five or 10 or 50 years. Probably not. Or they will have changed dramatically. Or this content may have gone away or become somewhat inaccessible. However, a book is forever. Long after I'm gone and long after most of these places are gone, this book will still be around and other books like it. And so that, I think, to me speaks to the importance and permanence of still publishing, of still actually printing a book and getting it into as many hands as possible. This experience to me has been a great reminder of it. And the impact, I have a pretty decent following on social media, but when you write a book, that changes things. People see that in a different way. And these places are treated even with more reverence because, hey, they were included in a book. That must mean they're important. It's just not a TikTok. It's just not a photo on Instagram.
So what did you learn about road tripping from, putting this book together and everything you've done over the years?
Oh, my goodness. So many things. One thing I certainly learned is that I have an immense capacity for punishment, because, I mean, these trips are long and they're arduous. One particular trip, I did close to 10,000 miles over the course of 10, 11 days, so much so that the gentleman at the rental store when I returned the car in Dallas could not understand how so many miles could be put in a car. So I certainly learned a lot of things about myself. When you're alone on the road for long hours, you learn a lot. But to me, it has been a reminder of just the wondrous American spirit, right? And how these places are being kept alive by people who aren't looking to get rich and aren't looking to get famous. They are truly in the service business. They are trying to create experiences for people. They are trying to honor history, the legacy and heritage of their own families. And that means so much to me. So the fact that I can shine a spotlight on a place that's been in one family for generations or multiple families, and they're still trying to do the right thing by keeping it going, that to me is an essential part of what makes America, America, the good in America. And if we can preserve more of that, goodness knows we need it. And if I can contribute even slightly to that, that's fantastic.
What advice do you have for people who want to, explore some of this stuff themselves?
Yeah, I mean, buy my book. but aside from that, it definitely, but I mean that facetiously, I mean, do a little research. You definitely want to know where you're going. And there's lots of resources online and different websites and Instagram accounts and such. And develop a loose plan for your trip and what your itinerary will be for the day. But generally speaking, allow yourself the freedom of discovery, of finding things that weren't on your itinerary, of taking detours, of switching up your plans. One thing I do, and it may not be the best advice, is when I'm traveling, I never know where I'm going to stay that night, because I don't want to worry about getting to the hotel by 9 p.m. I'll stop where I stop, because I want to make sure that I get as much out of the road and have as much freedom to explore detours and places that weren't on my list as possible.
Oh, that's interesting. So are you a stay anywhere you can find a spot, motel kind of person? Bed bugs be darned, or what?
Well, not to that extent. I will definitely do a little bit of research, and I like to support mom and pops, but I'm not on Hilton's payroll at all, but I do use the Hilton app and will sometimes say, okay, it's 8 o'clock. I think I know generally where I might stay around here. Is there anything available on this app within like 50 or 70 miles? And usually I've been okay. I've never been in a situation where I have not been able to find a place to stay, but I do have a nice cozy Volkswagen Tiguan, and if it comes to it, I'm sure I could spend the night in the car and do a little bit of do a, get a little taste of van life.
Nice. Well, and that actually raises a question. One of our producers, Jose, is our resident car guy on our team, wonders if you have an opinion on the best, make model of vehicle for road trips.
Oh boy. Well, I mean, to me, I always say the best car that you have is the best car is the car that you have, right? And it's just sort of making, to me, it's just about the wondrous ability of this thing to get you to see places. But I've always been, just personally, for some reason, partial to Volkswagens. But I think to the extent to which you can just find a car that you're comfortable with, is certainly the best way to go. What I try to do is, when I am renting a car, because I don't take my car all around the country, I do, I do have to fly to places. I try to find an all-wheel drive car, something that's good and reliable, because you will encounter off-road situations sometimes, or dirt roads, or certainly traveling through Montana, as I did one February. I ran into a number of elevation-driven snowstorms, and I was really glad that I had my Mazda CX-30, because it got me through all kinds of tricky situations that a traditional car might not have. So think in terms of safety and comfort when you're renting the car or making your decision.
Hashtag not sponsored, but don't sleep on the Toyota Sienna minivan. All right, now we've
Oh,
all
there
said
you
our
go.
favorite.
That's a good ticket.
Rolando Pujol is the retrologist and the author of The Great American Retro Road Trip, a celebration of roadside Americana. It's out now from Artisan Books. Rolando, happy travels. Thanks for being with us on the 21st show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here. Appreciate it.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66.
That's it for this week. We'll leave you with some road trip music from the great Nat King Cole. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again next week.
Get your kicks on Route 66. Now you go through St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, and Oklahoma City looks mighty pretty. You'll see Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, Kingman, Barstow, San Bernardino. Won't you get hip to this timely tip? When you make that California trip, get your kicks on Route 66.